up in the middle of the night. Oh, we're here in Tampa after day one of spring training. On the Fan, I am Ricky Ricardo. Good to be with you. Michael Fliegen at Fleegs producing our fine program, 3 hours worth, as we will review everything that went down on day one today here at Yankee Camp. We'll talk about the Mets situation, Knicks with a blowout. I mean, no Embiid, I get it, but still a blowout win by 49 points down the turnpike in Philadelphia. Some Winter Olympic stuff that maybe some of you can help me out. Some of these things I just don't understand. I mean, I wouldn't know the difference from half pipe to crack pipe. I don't know either one of them. But we'll get into all of that and much, much more. Between now and now, I haven't been on since the Super Bowl. And I have gotten a lot of requests from people say, hey, man, the next time you're on the radio, and I know this is kind of late, and you know, we'll be back on again. Matter of fact, I'm back on tomorrow night after Lugi, and that's a tough act to follow, generational talent like Lugauer. And we'll be on at midnight later on tonight into your Friday. But I've gotten several requests from people for me to comment on the Bad Bunny halftime show. Now, that is the world that I come from, radio-wise. That reggaeton, you know, half-Spanish language career of mine, because my first 15 years was all English language in New York, and then flipped over to, you know, Spanish language radio. And I've been right there on the ground floor of the whole reggaeton scene in Puerto Rico when it first got started, when it peaked. So at some point between now and 5 o'clock when we turn it over to Alan Jerry for the warm-up show, I will give you my thoughts on the Bad Bunny show, the effect in these next few days since he performed within the Latino community, which is completely divided, I got to tell you. And for some of you out there that, you know, might be saying to yourself, well, you know, I didn't like it because I couldn't understand it. That's okay. And I'm going to explain to you why you don't have to justify it to anybody. And I will give you the God's honest truth right down the middle about what I thought and what the lasting effects may be. And I'll make some comparisons for those of you that go back long enough, musically and culturally, what that whole performance really meant, especially to the huge Hispanic community that listens to us in the metropolitan area. Mr. Fliegelman, how are you, my friend? Long time no work together. How are you?
It's been a while, Ricky. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear your voice again. So day one is in the books at Steinbrenner Field. And pitchers and catchers and a few position players arrived. I thought it was interesting that basically to a man, everybody got asked one common question. And it's all about the quote-unquote running it back part for the Yanks. And if you want to get in on this, folks, 888-808-1019. Pick up the phone. Let's talk about it. And it was almost like a stock answer, because what was taboo just a couple of weeks ago, even when Brian Cashman, you know, came on and said, no, no, we're not running it back, you know, throughout all kinds. They're running it back, folks. That's what they're doing. Of the 26 guys that were on the roster at the end of the year when they lost to the Blue Jays, of those 26, 24 of them are back. 24 out of 26. And we all know who the two are that aren't back. Their last names start with W, and they're in Port St. Lucie with the Mets and arriving in Yankee bags. And, you know, I don't have to tell you about Luke Weaver and Devin Williams. Those are the only two from the 26 that aren't back. Now, there's some additions. We'll see who makes the team. You know, the initial March 25th roster that goes to San Francisco may include a Paul DeJong or someone like that, due to some of the injuries that the Yankees have here towards the beginning of the season. But in general, it's kind of accepted now that, yeah, the team's running it back. But that's not a bad thing. Because to a man, the answers today, and I'm talking veterans like Goldschmidt, I'm talking Jazz Chisholm, you know, we've heard from the captain, everyone is saying, hey, we think we're good enough. We just didn't get the job done last year, but we think we can and will get the job done this year with basically the same cast of characters, give or take one or two here at the beginning of the season, like I just mentioned. But at least we kicked off spring training earlier on your Wednesday with the notion that, yeah, you guys were all right. All the fans, all the hosts, yes, they've accepted the fact that, look, we're running it back. I guess that is step one into moving forward with the 2026 Yankee season. The first thing is to just accept the fact, yeah, we're running it back. And compared to what we could have done, we are content with this group and think that this group that won 94 games last year, just didn't beat Toronto, okay, is good enough to win it this year. Funny, because Aaron Boone was asked today during his opening presser about why they had so much difficulty with the Blue Jays. And he narrowed it back to those seven games. You remember, folks, during the middle of the season, right there, June, July, the Yankees played two series in Toronto about 3 weeks apart. One of them was Canada Day. I guess it's July 1st. So it was right before July 4th. But for them, their big holiday is July 1st. That's Canada Day. I think that was the day they beat up Max Fried a little bit. And then they went back and played another three-game series. If memory serves me correctly, from those seven games, I think the Jays won either five or six out of those seven games. Right there, you can pinpoint where the tie-breaking situation was created. It was those two series in Toronto midsummer. And Boone today said that, well, they caught us when we were, I think the word he used was a little broken. That was the term Aaron Boone used today. They caught us when we were a little bit broken midseason. And those two series, those seven games, made the difference on the last day of the season when both teams ended up with 94 wins, but the Jays obviously won the season series, and we all know what happened after that. But to a man, this team believes from top to bottom, management, players, clubhouse, that you name it, at the notion that they are running it back has been, I guess, accepted. And what they're saying is, we are good enough. We should have done it last year. We are good enough to get it done this year. I don't know how you guys as Yankee fans feel about that. I have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'll be there for all 162. I'm going to broadcast each and every game in Espanol, as I've done for the last 14 years, whatever it might be. So I've got to take them at their word. And right now, look, the moves are done. This is the team we got. And yeah, they're going to run it back. And hopefully they'll win one more game than either the Blue Jays, the Orioles, or the Red Sox. And, you know, no disrespect to the Tampa Bay Rays. They always put a competitive team on the field. But I really do think that the main competitors this year will be the Blue Jays. The Red Sox, remember, it's ex-Yankee Caleb Durbin that got traded there to play third base a day ago. And the resurgence of the Baltimore Orioles, who signed Chris Bassett. $18 million fleegs for Bassett? Well, pretty penny. The Orioles usually don't spend that kind of money. But Bassett now to reinforce a young rotation with another veteran arm. Another thing that I thought was interesting today, folks, and I rarely, and I mean rarely, have ever seen Aaron Boone basically speechless. But there was one question that was asked of him today, and it was asked on two occasions by all the beat writers. And it was about the comments made by a usually very quiet, non-controversial, flies-under-the-radar type of baseball player and human being. in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And IKF's comment about, as a Blue Jay last year, we wanted, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, we basically wanted the Yankees instead of the Red Sox. That they preferred and were cheering for, hoping to get the Yankees and not Boston. Now, did he say that because he now plays for the Boston Red Sox? Was that just a way to endear himself to his new teammates right off the top, to the fan base in Boston? Because Isaiah Kiner-Falefa isn't that kind of guy. We got to know him pretty well when he was in New York. I mean, he barely ever speaks. And to say anything, you know, of any consequence or controversy is very, very rare. Very, very unlike IKF. And Booney got caught off guard when he was asked to react to the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa comments. At first, he said, it's almost like, I'm not sure, maybe he didn't hear it. Maybe he was traveling that day to get, you know, getting settled into Tampa. But it caught him off guard, and one of the few times that a very, very glib and very outspoken Aaron Boone really didn't, you know, have much to say and got, legitimately surprised, is the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa comments. We have the audio of it, please? All right, let us hear it. Here's Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, what he said about the Yankees in the playoffs. Here's Boone's response. Okay, go ahead.
IKF told Red Sox reporters that the Blue Jays were hoping to see you guys in the playoffs last year because they thought you were an easier matchup. How do you feel about that?
I guess he was right. A little surprising to hear IKF say that, but whatever, that's fine. I mean,
does it bother you at all?
Not really, honestly. I mean, you got to play who you play and whatever.
So you could tell where Aaron really, he was legitimately surprised and stunned to hear that and didn't really know how to answer it. Because Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has never been that kind of guy to, you know, rock the boat. And those comments, you know, they kind of stung a little bit at Yankee camp today. Now, you know, why? Well, as he said, look, they beat us. So the only answer that Booney could give you was, well, I guess he was right. Interesting. Interesting to say the least. So a quasi-eventful day. Other than those two things, just the question about, you know, really running it back where players just, you know, kind of looked, took a sigh and said, yeah, okay, but we think we're good enough to win it, and we're going to win it. And then the Kiner-Falefa comments really were the two things that stuck out on day one. Players are healthy. Booney did say that there are no, and knock on wood here, that there are no surprise injuries at the beginning of camp. Much the opposite, obviously, of what's happening down in Port St. Lucie with the Mets. And we all know about the surgery for Francisco Lindor. On the day that the Hammett bone played a key role in all of Major League Baseball with three reports of broken Hammett bones. Corbin Carroll, who supposedly suffered his injury in June, but the x-rays were negative, but now it comes on the first day of spring training. I guess he had an MRI, I don't know, a day or two ago. And then Jackson Holliday of the Orioles, Matt Holliday's kid. Another one with a broken Hammett bone. So it says, you know, these things come in threes. Well, they came in threes. Lindor, Carroll, and Holliday. But other than that, the Yankees healthy, which is the good news. Your take on timing, I think, is the one thing about the Mets that I'd like to get your take on. The timing of the announcement of Soto moving to left field. I mean, You're going to tell me, you know, David Stearns, that you, this had not even been discussed up until, what, a day or two ago? Are you kidding? I mean, just because he's going to play left field for the Dominican team in the WBC, which is a whole other thing, by the way. I'll get into that. But now, because of that, the Mets announced he's going to play left field. I mean, you didn't know that back in, I don't know, December? Winter meetings? Wasn't talked about? Not brought up? I doubt it. So, you know, a couple of pieces of Met news. The Yankee news on day one from Steinbrenner Field. If you want to get in on the Knicks, they get into the All-Star break with a 49-point win over the Joel Embiid-less Philadelphia 76ers. But I tell you what, they split the season series with Philly, who they may see again in the postseason, and the road team won all four games. Now, Joel Embiid has been playing like the old Embiid as of late, so I don't know if you could just toss this one out if you're looking at it from the Philly point of view. I mean, you know, 49 points is 49 points. I mean, this is just complete domination. And the Knicks didn't have, and you know, a couple of their own stars either. So, you know, because no Anunoby, it's almost the equal of having no Embiid. So all of that on the table. I caught something on Apple TV. I always throw something in that's non-sports related. And I think this is really interesting because the other night I watched this special. It's a documentary on the great filmmaker Mel Brooks, one of my favorites of all time. Fleegs, are you a Mel Brooks movie guy?
Is anybody not a Mel Brooks fan?
All right. So Mel Brooks, there's a documentary out on his life and career called The 99-Year-Old Man. Have you seen this?
I have not, but I know Judd Apatow directed it. It's on my list.
All right. The 99-Year-Old Man. And it is an in-depth look into the mind of the genius filmmaker, Mel Brooks. Some of the funniest movies of all time. Now, my favorite, and I pulled out I have a complete unedited copy, and it's a disc, which I had to go and like find a disc player and connect it and watched over again. I did this over the weekend before the Super Bowl started, but over the weekend I watched for like the 100th time, but it's been a while since I've seen it, Blazing Saddles. And a couple of my neighbors came over, I rewound it, and we watched it, and they had never seen, believe it or not, Fleegs, there are people out here on this earth, you know, that have been around that had never seen Blazing Saddles, the original, uncut Blazing Saddles. And we stood, I mean, sat here in my living room watching it on the big screen with the, you know, the good sound and the whole thing. And these people were on the floor laughing. Had never seen Blazing Saddles. Three of my neighbors on the floor in laughter. And everyone had the same opinion. At the end of the movie, they all said the same thing. They could never make that movie again today. In today's PC world, Blazing Saddles could never be even, forget, you know, in theaters, not even, in, you know, on streaming. Nowhere. Too much politically incorrect. Mel Brooks and Blazing Saddles. So my question is, other than Blazing Saddles, and it doesn't have to be Mel Brooks, what other movie have you seen over the years that you say to yourself, boy, they could not do that again today? Give it some thought. Give me another flick that you've seen in the past over the years that when you think about it, boy, they couldn't do that today. And Blazing Saddles, to me, is the number one example of that. 888-808-1019. Let's get it going with Steve up in Stamford, Connecticut. Stevie, how are you? Good morning to you. I got plenty of coffee. How are you?
I'm good, Ricky. How you doing? I enjoy your show immensely, which you're on all the time.
Thank you.
I'll give you one movie really quick. How about Porky's? I don't know if that's going to be with that.
Yeah, you probably couldn't do Porky's today. You're right.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. So, two quick sports points. First of all, I want to use the Yankees and the Knicks. A quick point on each. I have no confidence in the Yankees management or ownership. None. We're wasting Aaron Judge, a Hall of Famer. We're wasting his years. If you look at Boston, got better. Every team in the East got better. But we have to now depend on Trent Grisham having another career year. We have to depend on Ben Rice continuing to improve and become a superstar. We have a worse bullpen, and the big calling card, and we have Ryan McMahon, who can't hit at third base, even though I love his glove. And so our big calling card of improvement is hoping that Gerrit Cole, when pitching wasn't our problem anyway, returns in the same form that he was, even though he's coming off a major injury in his mid-30s. And that is supposed to be good enough to be better than all of the other improved teams in the East and better than the Dodgers. And look how they've improved. I don't think he wants to win. I think he's satisfied with, you know, the whole get into the playoffs and throw, it's all a crapshoot and, you know, throw your hat in the ring at that point. But this team, it gives me no confidence. And well, I'm curious because, you know, the other, just as a comparison, I love to hear your point on this, is other than in the Knicks, my other diehard team, while I can't stand the owner, I do believe that the GM is the best GM that I've seen on any one of my teams in forever. And look what he did with getting Alvarado. He turns Umicelli, who we weren't even using, and a second-round pick into a bulldog point guard defender who is really going to help this team. He made everything that guy does turns to gold. And I haven't felt like that about Brian Cashman in a long, long time.
What a night Alvarado had tonight, huh?
Do you see the energy that he brings?
Oh, no, no. I am a big Alvarado fan. I thought the edge that he brings, this toughness, you know, everything that he's made of is just perfect for this team. Perfect. He's
You're
a hometown guy.
100% right.
Yeah. Brooklyn born, Queens raised, street level, you know, mindset on the court, was hot from three. You know, just a great night down.
And the threes is a bonus. You know that the threes are gravy. What we need is that, and you said it, Ricky, perfectly. He gives us edge. He gives us what Mikal Bridges doesn't have. And my favorite, Nick, OG Anunoby, as much as I love him and you should never trade him, he doesn't have that edge. They're vanilla. And even Brunson, as much as I love him, he's got a little edge to him. But we don't have anybody who gets down and dirty and plays defense. Alvarado would have played really well with Oakley, Mason, Starks, and, you know, and Derek Harper.
Like, you're right. He's got a lot of the late Anthony Mason in him and Oakley. He's that kind of – he's tough. Don't mess with any of his teammates. He brings a mindset that hopefully will spread amongst his teammates as the second half of the season or the remainder of the regular season goes on and into the postseason. You need that kind of mindset. Now, back to your Yankees, the worry about the Yankees. Now, you are correct that is the mindset the conceptual thought for this season is, we didn't get it done with this group, but we're confident that this group can take it one step further. Now, you brought up an interesting point, Steve. The Red Sox have improved. At least I look at it as an improvement, especially in their pitching. Toronto, I'm not sure about the Blue Jays. You know, Santander is not going to be here. I thought maybe Santander could, you know, replace some of the offense missing from Bo Bichette. Who knows what the Japanese third baseman's going to be on the major league level? I mean, he was a slugger in Japan. I've got to see it, you know, in Toronto on against major league pitching. They lose a proven team leader, one of the pillars of that team in Bo Bichette. I can't underscore enough how losing Bo Bichette is a huge loss for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think the Red Sox are the team. This could be 2026 could be a classic Yankees Red Sox battle for the American League East. But Boone said this today, and I agree with him. The sneaky team in the American League East this year are the Orioles. Remember,
Come on. You really believe that, Ricky? Like, where did show me?
Steve, the Orioles won the division just a couple of years ago. It wasn't that far back.
Here's the bottom line. Boston's improvements, I agree with. When you bring in Sonny Gray and you bring in Ranger Suarez, they added at their weakness, their starting pitching, to really, don't think Sonny Gray doesn't want to stick it to the Yankees and the Yankee fans.
Oh, I know he does.
Two really reliable, good starting pitching. And they have everything. With all of the hitting they have in that lineup and all the young kids and the athleticism and Roman Anthony coming back, they added to, they made up for their weakness. I don't care about Pete Alonso. And until Baltimore shows you pitching, to me, they're a paper tiger. To me, it is about Boston. And when Boston improves their weakness to that degree and the Yankees come back as, to me, a worse team, Camilo Duval, because he showed it to us the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden that's going to make up for our bullpen? I mean, we're a worse team than we were. And we're praying that Grisham comes back and has the same kind of year. And we're hoping that Ben Rice could do it over a full year. But we don't. Those are variables. That's not proven. And Goldschmidt's a year older. I mean, we don't have Volpe. I mean, Caballero's probably better than Volpe anyway, but we don't have Volpe. Man can't hit. We are a flawed team. And Boston went right out and addressed their biggest weaknesses. So that is what scares the living crap out of me. And I feel like we're wasting Aaron Judge's premier years with an owner who's satisfied to just maybe get into the playoffs and throw our hat in the ring. And that is a hard, that's not a Yankee way.
No, you know, Steve, from being there today, from top to bottom, they're convinced that this group, bringing this group back with the return of Cole, they think Rodon's going to be fine. They think the kid Weathers that they got from Miami is going to contribute. You know, Booney's talking about guys that are starting the season in the rotation, eventually moving themselves into bullpen roles as some of those veterans come back that we just talked about. They're convinced. They're convinced that this is good enough to get the job done. Because they were so close last year, the fact that they won as many games as Toronto, and it was just that blue. I'm telling you, Booney pinpointed it today. The two series mid-season against Toronto up at Sky Dome, Rogers Center, whatever they call it. He pinpointed those games when they were, quote-unquote, a little broken as the difference in the season. Now,
yeah, but how is that possible, Ricky? Think about it. We were close. We weren't close to beating Toronto in the second round. Toronto still went out and beat Seattle in the ALCS, and then came within 2 outs of beating the Dodgers. We weren't close. We were never close to beating the Dodgers, 2 years ago in the World Series. We weren't close. We weren't close to beating Toronto when it counted in October. I don't care about the regular season. We weren't close to beating them when it counted. We weren't close. You know, they still have to go on and beat Seattle. I mean, we weren't close last year. They're delusional.
Now,
and we were healthy.
Steve, that is, and thank you for the phone call, Steve. I'm just telling you, that's the way they look at it. And that's why, look, I need your reaction, Yankee fans. Steve is upset. And I dare say he's probably not the only one. But that, as of day one right now, and what was interesting was hearing it from the players. We're good enough to get the job done. We didn't get it done last year, but this group, and it's basically, like I said, it's basically the same group. The only thing you need is Marcus Stroman to walk through that door to really, but he's not, obviously not. I don't think anybody picked up Marcus Stroman. But of the 26 guys that ended the season, 24 of them are back. It's just Weaver and Williams that went to the Mets. The other 24 guys are there. And they're convinced that they're good enough to this season get to that 95th or 96th or 97th win, whatever it takes to win the division and make a deep playoff run. Do I think this team, as constituted, can beat the Dodgers? That's a whole nother story. 888-808-1019. Give me a call. Give me that movie, a movie that you couldn't even think about making today. Did you see Porky's Fleegs? He just brought up Porky's. You remember that?
I have not, no.
Porky's was really politically incorrect. So that's a good, he got that one right. All right, let us know what you think.